Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome on into another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob D. You can always find me on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. Rob and Jeff will be in very shortly. We'll be getting to talking about Spencer Strider, how we'd be drafting the first two rounds if we were drafting right now, Ronel Blanco, the ads from this previous weekend, and some of the guys that we might have some serious concerns for so far in this small sample of the early season. Come check out the Pull Hitter Patreon. Go to patreon.com, put Pull Hitter Fantasy in the search bar. It's also my pinned tweet. You'll get the other additional podcast that me, Rob, and Jeff do, as well as several other podcasts and articles from me during the week. Come check it out for free right now if you want for 1 week. And we hope to see you in there and in the Discord, where there's plenty of fantasy baseball talk and analysis that's being spread and enjoyed by all. So come check it out. Hope to see you there soon. Enjoy this episode with Rob and Jeff.
Here's the pitch.
Today, which doesn't mean 2 hours necessarily, but I've got time.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. All right, welcome on into another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm here with my main men, Rob Silver, Jeff Zimmerman. How y'all doing on this wonderful Thursday, April 11th, as we storm through the early stages of baseball season? Jeff, what's going on?
Storm through. I have never had teams that I think everyone's probably this way that has multiple teams that some are just utter garbage right now. And you're just like, maybe I can get like a fifth place finish with this team. It's just like, great. I've lost my first 3 round picks already, you know? And then there's other ones that are like, at least they're healthy and you feel good about them. But I've never like felt this extreme so early.
Yeah. It'll be okay, Jeff. It'll all work itself out. Much like O.J. Simpson dying and going to hell, we just found out. But it'll all work itself out.
We always get some interesting news as we're about to start podcasting.
Exactly.
Well, could you imagine
the Bronco chase with Twitter? Like, I'm old enough. I was a kid when the Bronco chase happened. But could you imagine today the shit that people would be tweeting as he's being chased down the LA freeway there?
It really would be wild, like mind-boggling. Yeah. But also, too, we've also been so desensitized to like the outrageous things happening that, you know, like if I don't know if it would be like a little bit dumbed down as it was back in the day, but it's such an interesting point because I've heard so many people like bring up the point like that was the really not the start of reality TV because it started earlier than that, but like the attraction to following some event in someone's life like that. It's really, I remember watching the Knicks game, the Knicks Rockets in the finals, and them the Knicks are in the finals and they cut to this. That was wild, you know.
It is a great 30 for 30 if people have never seen it about that night. It really was one of the craziest nights ever.
Really is. I have to watch that again, actually. That was a fascinating film for sure. So we have all these rash of injuries coming on. Everyone is a little bit down in the dumps, you know. My pitcher, my third pitcher got hurt, my fourth pitcher's elbow, lots of stuff happening. And I know it's definitely affected some people's moods as they, you know, takes a little bit of the fun out of, you know, fantasy baseball if it's your hobby, you know, and you have all these players that you wanted to do good on your team. And now you're just scratching to get the Cody Bradfords of the world on your team. So I don't know, like, how do you guys, I don't know if you've absorbed any of these injuries, but what would be your best fight to anyone thumbing through that and trying to get through the doldrums of these early elbow injuries?
I played long enough that I've had other teams deal with it. I mean, even last year I had a team with my first four picks all on the IL at the same time. I think there's a difference between like they're on the IL and like they're done. Cause it's like, just, you have at least with the IL, you have a hope that they're coming back. But with, you know, Tommy John, it's like, well, just got to cut him, like move on. Sometimes it sucks. In two of my leagues, they held on to Strider. It was like, well, if the news does come back, maybe it was a dumb move. And in the end, but it was just like, we'll just kind of see what happens. Cause obviously those teams now need pitching, so maybe the best bet is to get this guy that may come back for a couple months. But I think there's probably 95% chance we're just done for the season. The other thing is just kind of set goals and keep going. I mean, it's going to happen to other people. It's going to happen to, we really haven't got the hitters, someone out that way, but usually that always happens too. Judge was a top pick last year, and he spent a lot of time on the IL. I remember that year Trey Turner was like a top three pick and missed the whole year. So, I mean, I'm sure we're going to be losing some hitters also, but like I said, that's part of the season, like the reason to do it. It's like you can go for that second, third place and hopefully maybe cash if you're in a cash league or just keep working on it. But this is what it is. It's what the game is. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to have all the best players and have a 40-point lead in the league and just cruise to the end. It's you're going to have bumps along the way.
No, no, no. Unless you're Rob DiPietro, then you already have a 40-point lead and you're cruising to the finish line. And you've already picked which seat you want at the CLQ auction table next year in August. You prefer being closer to the door, right? In case you have to go to the bathroom mid-auction during the CLQ. Just joking. I don't want to put that negativity in the universe by talking about that 10 days into the season. We'll talk about where you like sitting in mid-May.
I didn't see if I'm not last, am I?
So in preparation for today, I went back to the main event ADP. Obviously, Spencer Strider was the first pitcher taken, and it's brutal if you took Strider, right? even if he's out for 8 weeks, and I don't think he will be, but I obviously hope for baseball that he's back at some point this year. It's brutal. Let me read off the next 39 pitchers that went in ADP. Grab yourself a coffee, Rob. Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Pablo Lopez, Tyler Glasnow, Tarek Skubal, Kevin Gausman, who was hurt when he was drafted in almost all the mains, and at least in theory is pitching right now. Edwin Diaz, Freddy Peralta, Zach Gallen, Yamamoto, Hader, Webb, Framber Valdez. So put one finger in the air. He's obviously on the IL and should be okay, but it's concerning if you own Framber Valdez. I'm on pitcher number 18 now. Aaron Nola, Max Fried, Emmanuel Clase, Logan Gilbert, Bobby Miller, Grayson Rodriguez, Camilo Duvall, Rizzo Iglesias, Andre Munoz, Evan Phillips, Zach Eflin, Blake Snell, Joe Ryan, Cole Reagans, David Bednar, also still pitching, clearly hurt, Alexis Diaz, Jesus Lizardo, Pete Fairbanks, Dylan Cease, Chris Sale, Clay Holmes, Ryan Helsley, Craig Kimbrell. Craig Kimbrell was pitcher 40 that was taken. That obviously includes closers. We're mostly talking about starters, but that's sort of random. There's nothing about, like, it's not like closers don't get hurt all the time. So other than Strider, who's the headline, we have Framber. So two out of, call it 39, because Ohtani's obviously not actually a pitcher. Then we have Justin Steele and Shane Bieber. But then I can go another seven pitchers. My point just is there's a little bit of perception, and it's not to in any way minimize how serious Strider is or Bieber is or Framber potentially is. Like, those are big deals. But it's not quite as tragic from a fantasy perspective as it may feel right now. Like, you asked the question on the outline, so if we were redrafting, would you do everything differently? And I think the answer is no. If anything, I would just keep taking more pitchers, which I know is counterintuitive, because there's lots of people, as the Bieber then Strider news came, bam, 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 who are like, so this is affirmation for fade pitching. And my thing with the fade pitching is I know how I feel on my teams that I had Bieber on trying to figure out who I'm going to replace him with, because there's a bunch of bad options. If I faded pitching, so let's say I lucked into three or four decent starting pitchers, but I have like three or four holes every single week I need to fill. Am I in a better position than the guy who took like a lot of pitching early and lost one of the pitchers and then just kept taking pitching? Because they're very, even the Strider teams, like obviously if you draft Strider, one of the things it can do for you is you don't need your second starting pitcher in theory until, I don't know when you used to hit it, Rob, like round five, round six, you don't need to get that second starting pitcher right away. But most people who take Strider, I assume, who kind of adopt to a similar draft approach that we take and most people take, it's not like you're not still taking starters in round 12, round 15, round 17, trying to get four or five starting pitchers on your bench just because you have Spencer Strider. So like building up pitching depth, one of the reasons you do this is you know this is going to happen. You hope it's not your best pitcher. You obviously hope it's not a Spencer Strider. But if anything, I think what's going on right now is affirmation for you just need a lot of starting pitchers early and often because the options are only going to get shittier once the season starts. Like there'll be guys who emerge, but 14 other owners want the same guy every week.
You mean you shouldn't have went Strider Gausman?
I'm not even
just asking for a friend.
Hypothetically?
Yeah, hypothetically in a main event, you know? Your CLQ, you know?
Gossman's going to be fine, right? Like we're at a point of the season, jokes aside, where Brandon Nimmo raised his OPS by like 500 points in one game. Kevin Gausman goes out his third start of the season. Remember, Colorado on Friday is his third start of the season, throws seven shutout innings, and suddenly his ERA isn't good, but it's meh. And it's like, oh, I don't know why I was worried about Kevin Gausman. I'm a little bit worried about Kevin Gausman, just to be clear. But like he's had two starts.
Yeah, it's still early. I guess people were wondering about the velocity, but it was someone pointed out too that his velocity last April started off pretty low as well. And you know, just kind of, you know, Bassett does the same thing. He to have a routine to get back into the and like at this point, do you want to be throwing max velocity to start the season? It doesn't seem that way, you know. But you know, with Strider, when I draft like pitching, you know, I think we've always discussed about trying to get pitching depth, a whole bunch of winning the race to the best, you know, pitchers 8 through 12, if that's how you like to build your team. I've been shooting to do the main event benches from, you know, 5 to 6 pitchers on the bench to start the season. And sometimes the race to 3 or 4 to start a draft was really solid. And I think one of my mains is probably the Saturday main in Vegas, where I'm a little concerned. I didn't get my SP3 till later than I usually do. And that's kind of a little bit worry. But in one of my mains, I have Grayson Rodriguez and Berrios, you know, behind him. So it's still, you know, not great. But in another main, the one I share with Dylan White, we did take Logan Gilbert and Grayson Rodriguez at 4-5 on top of Strider in round one. So that one you feel like, okay, we still have, you know, two guys that might carry 180 innings and give you some, you know, good stats to counter that. But if we do get some news, again, give up.
I mean, that was always one of Toby's arguments for pocket aces, right? Like, one of the arguments for pocket aces is if one of the two aces go down, and just probabilistically, if, you know, if 40% of pitchers are going to spend some time on the IL, probabilistically, if you take two starting pitchers, whenever you take the two starting pitchers, the odds are decent. One of your two starting pitchers is going down at some point of the season. Hopefully it's not for the full season. But one of the benefits of pocket aces is if you lose one ace, you still have a second ace. If you take Grayson and Logan Gilbert as your 2-3, those are two damn good pitchers. Can you win a 15-team league with those two as your 1-2 instead of your 2-3? Of course you fucking can. Like, don't tell me you can't win. So it's not to minimize what losing Spencer Strider or Ronald Acuña or Bobby Witt or whoever you take in the first round is. It hurts. That's your first pick. But you can win with two great pitchers as your 1-2 still.
Yeah, definitely. It's just kind of, you know, I think like we always said, it's just that back end depth. If you hit on a couple of the later pitchers, if you hit on your Tanner Houck, if you drafted Spencer Turnbull in round 29, all these things kind of, you know, it doesn't alleviate what you expect from Spencer Strider, but it kind of helps you get to the finish line a little easier.
And just one last point. I know I'm fucking going on.
No, go.
If you have that depth, it's not just if I hit on Tanner Houck and Tanner Houck turns out to be a top 20 pitcher. It's that by having 5 starting pitchers on your bench, even though you lost Spencer Strider, I almost guarantee, even if you don't have one of those guys who right now you feel pretty good about, they're still better than what you can find on the waiver wire most weeks. So it's just being able to stream off your bench. So you like, even if it's just a league average, mediocre starting pitcher, that's better than blowing things up, like so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I look back at, you know, I had a DeGrom team last year. from the second round, and all, you know, he gave you a little more than Strider did. I was still able to pump out a second place finish right behind the beast that is John Posma. But if you look at some teams too from last year that drafted Agram, these are the overall finishes. There was seven teams in the top 100 and one at 102, and the average place of those teams that drafted Agram was right in the middle of the total main event, you know, entries. So it's like, yeah, it hurt, but you can get past it. You know, it's just how you built your team and how you move forward with it. I think that's the biggest thing. Keep grinding away. That's the biggest message for sure. But let's say we do get some kind of news this weekend that he's going to take the regenerative path, the rest regenerative path to healing. What is the cutoff for you guys to hold him? Jeff, I know you have him. So what would be the, you know, 2 to 3 months? Is that something you realistically hold him? Or is it something like, you know, you hold him until that first news of a setback or something and you say, all right, maybe this is too much? What's the line for you in terms of how long you're willing to hold him for?
I think it'll probably come down to roster construction, depending on how many IL guys I have. Like, if I can just, like, you always have like one stash, but by the time you get like four other IL players and you're looking at him for like 4 months away, I just went, I actually have him on two leagues. I went to one of them. I'll still hold him in this one. I've still got, I didn't even start like Chris Sanchez or Brandon Pfaadt. I got Kyle Bradish possibly coming back here in a couple of weeks. I've already got a stash there, but that one seems fine. Like, I don't think like the hitters have really hit us that hard, or at least I haven't been lucky that way. No Royce Lewis's and stuff like that, where you're kind of holding them, but I can see a team where they just start piling up the IL guys and you're just happen to, Strider is going to be the easy cut, I think, would be for me.
I mean, here's one way of thinking about it. Kyle Bradish is starting a rehab assignment now. So he's in A ball. He'll be pitching in A ball. If it all goes perfectly, so let's be optimistic, I think Kyle Bradish is back in, call it, 3 weeks. So let's say he's back the first week of May, if things go well, starting in the major leagues for Baltimore. And let's go further and say Kyle Bradish comes back first week of May and is at least 90% as good as Kyle Bradish was last year and makes it the rest of the season. So best case scenario, he may not be up exactly what he was last year, but there was going to be regression anyways, but is a very, very good starting pitcher. He got injured second week of February to first week of May. So that's what, 2.5 months between injury diagnose and back in the majors. If we put that exact same scenario for Spencer Strider, and I know medical, like I know elbows don't actually work this way, but let's pretend he is Kyle Bradish and he got injured first week of April. Yeah, 2.5 months to that. So that's May, June. Let's say he's back by July 1st. So you're getting half a season of Strider, and put the same best case scenario hypotheticals onto him. He survives for the following 3 months and is 90% of Spencer Strider. So he's a top five starting pitcher in baseball. In that best case scenario, if somebody were to drop Spencer Strider in a 15 team league, how much do you spend in fab to get that if you thought that's the scenario that's coming? And the answer is you have to spend at least 200, 250. Like, that's a must add for half a season of a top five starting pitcher, because there's no rookie pitcher who could possibly get called up that is going to give you 3 months of best case scenario. Now, we don't have crystal balls. I've given you the best case scenario. There are obviously 17 other scenarios, all of which are descending degrees of worse than what I've just described. But I think that unless you absolutely need the roster spot to be able to field a full lineup, meaning I have other guys that I have to hold on to, and I cannot put 23 guys on without freeing up the Spencer Strider spot. If he's going the rehab route, I think you have to go week to week and hold on, because the upside is just too high, unless the other scenario is you have Phil Dussault, like, main overall winning pitching staff. Like, if your pitching staff is so ridiculously good that adding Spencer Strider in July is unnecessary, but I have weaknesses in my lineup, That's the other hypothetical, but don't be an obnoxious prick. Nobody has a pitching staff that good right now. You don't know that you have a pitching staff that good. So I think you hold on to Strider if he goes the rehab route for as long as you possibly can, because of the Kyle Bradish, because somebody else is going to pick him up for $200 and you need him almost certainly if you drafted Strider. But maybe I'm being like a conservative pussy, and maybe the right answer is just cut it loose. Like, you need the spot, start churning that spot hard. I don't know. What do you think, Rob?
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, I like Jeff said too, I kind of assessed my teams and looked at the depth. And like I said, I've been trying to build my depth, five or six pitchers on the bench. So currently I'm able to put in some players that can just get the job done in the meantime. But I need the words. I need those words to eat out for the season. I really need to hear that. Not with, you know, this is the first pick overall for me, you know, that I've invested heavily in. So I need to hear those words because, like you said, I've heard the debate. It's like, well, even if he comes back, he won't be Spencer Strider. And it's like, well, that's just a lot of forecasting on your part, you know, not like medically and like knowing what he's going to come back as, you know. So
every time Jacob DeGrom came back, he was Jacob DeGrom. The problem was he couldn't stay Jacob DeGrom.
Couldn't stay it. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I'm just going to hold them, like you said, until the news is like he's completely out for the season. As long as I can deal with it and hold him on my roster, I'm going to do it and make it work. I look at, he was dropped in six main events, and the pickups were Ashcraft, Ben Brown, Matt Manning, Martin Perez, Matt Waldron on the pitching side. And he was dropped for Michael A. Taylor as well. So I, you know, I've had pitchers on the bench that are better than that. So there's no reason for me to make a rash move. If he's out this Saturday, they say he's done and that's it. And we moved on, you know, but I need to hear those words. That's exactly what I'm going to do in the meantime. Yeah. All right. So I did ask you the question, if drafts were happening now and we were still in spring training, if it's anything, what changed in the first two rounds only, like, player wise, is there anything that has changed, shifted at all besides the Spencer Strider injury? Obviously pitching would get pushed up, I think. But is there anything else you guys would think that might change in this short period of time, this short 10 days?
I think there'd be some obvious fades. I'm trying to think of, like, overall, like, Lindor's not going to go where he was going. I mean, there's just like some obvious, there's just the guys that are struggling. Bobby Witt's going to probably go higher. Betts is going to go higher than Julio. Julio's just going to drop some, but it's still going to be Julio.
Is that right, though? That's what I'm trying to envision. Is that the right thing to do?
Well, you could use FanGraphs like in-season projections and see if it's actually changed that much.
Right.
It's one of the things like, oh, he's actually has this shown that he's got a, you know, his aging curve's better. He's improving. Like, there's some small changes. I remember at one point, I was looking, it was Sano was like the top increase in his projection, but it's like, he was pretty low to begin with, but it was, at least it wasn't actually horrible, but you can kind of look at the players like that have changed. But I'm trying to think overall, I think the one thing I would do is probably play it by feel. Is I would try to hold off on pitching and see what everyone else does. It'd be nice to have like a middle pick and jump in as late as you can. It's still like at some point get a bunch. It might be nice in like an auction. I always thought like that way, where it's just like, I'm just going to grab, you know, seven $12 guys. And that's the staff I'm going to go with, and then grab some $1 guys in the reserve round. But you just can't ever do that in a draft. They just all go. But I don't know if anything else. Robs, you guys got anything?
A specific player is people will be all back in on the Mike Trout train as of today. So Mike Trout's ADP in the main was 78, so it was sixth round pick. I don't think he makes it into the first round. People aren't that crazy, but I think people are like, injuries, fuck injuries. Mike Trout's awesome and he's back, baby. And I don't think he makes it like past the middle of the third round, maybe the 2-3 turn. He's running again. This is what Hall of Famers do, and Mike Trout's back, and I think Mike Trout would go wildly different as of today. And I get it; he is healthy as of today. But that Mike Trout could still hit baseballs was not the concern. The running is a surprise. Let's see if that stays. He's me putting this into the universe away from getting hurt again. But yeah, I think Mike Trout would go. I think Mike Trout would have of like top 150 picks. Him and maybe Michael Garcia, who I know didn't go late, but I think people will just convince themselves he's now a superstar player. I think those would be two big changes. CJ Abrams, I think people would say, oh, it's real and it's spectacular, baby. So I think he might go closer to like Ellie than he was going in drafts. So like mid-second round in some mains. If we were to re-go, some of the pitchers like Kirby would drop, like blah, blah, blah. That's all overreaction theater based on, again, two starts. But I think there'd be a reordering of starting pitchers just based on who's doing well and who's doing poorly.
It'd be interesting to see where Crochet ends up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great one. I could see him going way up being drafted.
Yeah, I'm thinking 50. Like fifth, sixth round is where I was.
Wow, that's okay. I was going to say top 150, but that's fantastic. I love that.
Which is crazy town.
It's crazy town.
But who would you take him? I mean, some of those guys going then. It was like, well, who do you want instead of him? I was actually kind of bringing up ADP. I didn't have it. Let me see. Pitcher wise, like,
ahead of
Blake Snell.
I would take
Zach Eflin.
Take Zach Eflin in 15 seconds over Crochet. Not even close.
Like this batch of guys, Hunter Brown, Michael King, like the 120 area, Carlos Rodon.
I would take Rodon over him. I'm a little bit worried about Brown. So
Brown's probably going to end up in the bullpen in about a few days.
Your faith in pitchers being able to stay healthy for a few more days is adorable, Jeff.
Verlander be able to make it back. It's just whoever they're going to move there when Verlander comes back.
I know.
It's
anyways. It's a fun question to always ask because I hope the NFBC does the second chance leagues again, like at Memorial Day time. They're so much fun for this very reason. It's like, do you believe the projections or fuck the projections? Crochet is not a 4-5 ERA pitcher. He's awesome. I'm taking him in the fourth round. It's just fun for that reason. Like the money's the money. If your teams are doing shitty, it's nice to have a second shot, but it's just fun for like actually when you have a bit of skin in the game. It's easy for us three goofballs on a podcast to say this is what we do. It's very different when you're on the clock with a minute to go. So I hope, Greg, you should get Phil. Like they'll do, apparently the NFBC will do anything Phil asks them to do. So you should get Phil to message them to start the second chance leagues again in May and say, make it very clear. He doesn't care if his second chance draft boards go public right away. So do whatever they want, with the draft boards, but they should start the second chance leagues. And I don't even think, I think they can either do them as standalone leagues or have an overall, or even just like put the signups out there, see what the level of interest is. And if the level of interest is, create like a structure for an overall. But I think people like doing that, even if it's just all the money stays in the league payout. Like, I don't know. I'm fine either way. I don't think you being crowned the second chance overall champion is that prestigious thing that you need an overall if the NFBC doesn't want to take some risk that they're not going to fill it. But I think they'd fill it. I think people are crazy enough right now and into it enough now that I think that if they say we're going to guarantee it doesn't have to be huge to start a $10,000 overall prize. We need to fill this many leagues. We're going to start drafts on the Wednesday of Memorial weekend. We'll go all the way till whenever Monday and it's go time or however they structure. I don't give a shit on the structure. I just think it's fun.
No, I think just like you said, just for this exact reason, just for this exact exercise, it makes for a great little practice to see who's going to react and who's going to, like you said, who's going to look at rest of season projections and say, nah, like this has to be wrong. This has to be right. I think that's awesome. Last year, they had a lot of I know for the Gladiator at, you know, the second chance, but they didn't do any of the Fab ones. That should be brought back, because there's definitely some teams who, if they lose a Strider or a Framber or everyone, they're just gonna climb in and say, yeah, I got to draft again, you know. And that's absolutely.
And I think if they start advertising it sooner rather than later, while people like have that itch still, they're more likely to fill drafts for 6 weeks from now.
Right, 100%. Maybe they can even do like slow draft, like slow Fab draft. You know,
sure.
That can even be a possibility.
As long as it finishes before you start your first 2025 draft in mid May, like as long as they don't over, it'll get confusing if you're doing a second chance league while you're doing your first next year slow DC draft. I don't know. Is that a June 1st start your first next year draft?
August.
You sure? Because that feels late to me. Maybe you should start doing 2025 drafts in June. Maybe you wait till July 4th to get things started. Think about it. You're backyard barbecuing. You're shooting off your fireworks, and you're starting a 2025 draft.
Jesus, man, you paint a beautiful picture, Rob. I mean, how can I say no to that? You know?
Yeah.
I'll add like to the ADP thing. I think you're totally right with like I think people would overreact to the Kirby Castillo, you know, combination there. Glasnow would definitely shoot up and maybe into the first round, but yep. Then I think there's some other play. You mentioned Abrams, but I think the obvious, like Tyler O'Neill, would shoot up, and I think even Christian Yelich, who looks really good and pulling the ball again, and he probably have a little bit of bump into his ADP as well. So, and I think that up at the top, I think what we would see is, I think the biggest thing up at the top, I thought, would be more of a discussion of Tatis at 2 or 3, with Witt and with J-Rod and probably Mookie, because Mookie looks otherworldly. But I think I think Tatis would probably gain a couple of more, because he didn't even get picked higher than fifth. I think that would change if things would start right now. Jeff, in your new Mind in the News column, you did hit on Ronald Blanco. You alluded to the Astros starting pitcher with Hunter Brown looking awful to start off, and JP France as well. And Verlander's on the way back, so what's the squeeze there? What's your read on it right now?
I don't think there's a way they can sit Blanco right now. Like, can you really just go to the guy like, all right, you almost threw two, you know, no hitters, and you're going to have to go to the bullpen. You know, it's like the way the rest of the staff is struggling. Like, I just don't think he'll be it. And I think everyone kind of assumed it. Personally, I think JP France is the worst pitcher, but Brown's struggling more right now. So it's going to be tough and iffy between it, but I think just the narrative has changed that I think one of those two are kind of fighting for their jobs, maybe off this next start to see who heads there. And I think a lot of Brown managers might be a little surprised if he's the one, but I think there's a decent chance he could be it.
Yeah, I mean, if when Verlander comes back, Blanco still has a zero ERA, we can look at all his advanced pitch metrics aside. Major League Baseball teams still at a certain point cannot say to a pitcher, you have not given up a single run in, by then, call it 3 or 4 starts, and we have to take you out of the rotation. Like, it's just not going to happen. The reality is Blanco has, what is it, a 4.6 Sierra, which is basically in line with his steamer and bat going forward projections. So, like, sometimes weird shit happens in seasons. I don't think Blanco is, I think we will Bryce Elder Blanco at some point this season and have conversations of, hey, you remember when Blanco had to stay in the rotation instead of these really good pitchers. But, you know, I think that's just reality. So I think I agree with Jeff. I think France is probably the worst pitcher here. So it's not even, there's a middle ground. Blanco may be fine the rest of the season, and with various injuries, and if Brown doesn't turn it around, may do better than Elder just because he survives. So surviving may allow him to do better, but he's obviously nowhere near this good a pitcher because he's not, he hasn't been that good. Like, no hitting the Blue Jays at this point is interesting, but not that impressive, if we're being honest.
No, yeah. I think, you know, Hunter Brown has just started off really odd. Like, he's lowering his curveball usage. Like, it just doesn't really look like he knows what he's doing, like, approach-wise. I think that'll balance out. France, I mean, you know, his 9% K minus walk last year. I think that alludes to, like, what we know already of what he can be. And even with the Ronald Blanco thing, I mean, even Christian Javier with his 1-1 zero ERA, it's his ERA 2.542. He's let up 18 fly balls. None of them has gone over the fence. It just seems like a lot of good fortune there for the Astros pitcher. So, but there's no chance you could take Blanco out. It's
no,
obviously,
it's not how baseball. Do you have their stuff plus rankings there by any chance, Rob? How do the Astros starters rank by stuff plus?
I don't. It's out of my leaderboard.
Oh man. We're letting our listeners down. We don't have their stuff plus rankings.
Okay. Well, I just brought it up real quick.
Can you post it in the show rundown at least how the stuff plus plays? I'm just joking.
Let's see.
I don't care.
Yeah, okay. Pass. You also noted about T'Juan Walker, Jeff, making his comeback. What are the chances that he doesn't get his rotation spot back if Spencer Turnbull is just lighting the world on fire?
I think that it's definitely, let's see what's going on. Like the way they sounded, like, oh, we're going to slow play him and give him the whole maybe 30 whole days. And if he looks better than the guys here, or if not, he's going to have to go to the bullpen, or maybe we'll hope someone gets hurt. You know, not hope that someone gets hurt. They're kind of looking good. I mean, they kind of have a loaded one, but Turnbull keeps throwing like he is, and it's, again, like, you really can't take him out, and Gonzalez really hadn't looked good in his rehab so far, so it's just going to be kind of an expensive bullpen arm, but I think that that's the right call. Philly, they usually try to win, so they're probably going to put out their best arms at the time, and like I said, someone's going to get hurt, so he'll get another chance to get back in there. That's kind of the given for the year.
I feel like we're having a Luis Rengifo moment in some ways with T'Juan Walker. It's like, is T'Juan Walker really a guy who comes back and just has a claim on a rotation spot anywhere? Like, if you spend 13 seconds digging in into him, his Sierra last year was like 5.497 Sierra last year. His projections are like, if you did the blind, like, do you like pitcher A or pitcher B? Even though Spencer Turnbull has no track record, the projections like Spencer Turnbull already better than T'Juan Walker. And I assume that both the steamer and the bat, like, if they see 4 or 5 more starts of Spencer Turnbull, not being awesome, but just being like a league average starting pitcher, maybe a little bit better than league average starting pitcher, I think the gap between him and T'Juan Walker is big, which makes T'Juan Walker for Philadelphia a really useful sixth starter. Like, every team who's a good team, and Philadelphia has the potential to be a very good team, especially if Atlanta's lost the best starting pitcher in baseball this year. I still think Atlanta's awesome, but their rotation isn't deep at this point. So I think T'Juan Walker as your sixth starter, as like a swing man who you keep stretched out enough, is a really useful guy to have. But they need to win as many games as they can. And I think that until Spencer Turnbull shows that he's doesn't give them a better chance than T'Juan Walker, I think they're, like Dave Dombrowski on down, a smart organization. I think they'll stick with the guy who gives them the best chance to win. And for now, I think that's Turnbull. That can change really quickly, though, too. Like, Spencer Turnbull could give up 6 runs in his next start, and we look ridiculous for ever suggesting that.
Yeah.
I have a tough read on if Philly, it's like, oh, we're spending, I don't even know, remember, like probably $1 million, maybe $2 million on Turnbull versus 18 on Walker. I just don't know. Like, the Yankees won't do that. Like, they're paying a guy, he's going to be playing no matter how shitty he is. It's like DJ LeMahieu is going to be in the field if he's healthy, even though he's not a good baseball player pretty much at this point. So that's just the only deal, is like, some teams, like, I don't know if it comes down from the owner, like, I'm paying this guy almost $20 million. He better be playing every day.
Yeah, boy, the T'Juan Walker's contract goes to 2026. Whoa, Jesus. Woof.
Buzz's girlfriend. Woof.
It's a pretty rough
one. Not a good sign. Yeah, that's a clear Dombrowski sign there. What, Rob, you mentioned projection changing. What is the biggest driver to a projection changing so quickly? Is it just straight up K-minus walk?
So both Steamer and the bat, as far as I know, Jeff, interrupt if I say anything that is incorrect. For pitchers, so pitchers and hitters are very different. For hitters, it really is every single day, Steamer and the bat gets updated with last night's game that drops out a little bit from the past. So if it's a sort, you know, at its core, it starts out with a weighted 3-year average that, and then starts adjusting off of that. Obviously, with each new piece of information for a hitter, something else drops out, but it moves very slowly for hitters. Like with a Miguel Sano that Jeff mentioned, where you have big gaps, it can move faster. But for most hitters, it's really hard to change. With pitchers, though, things like pitch velocity and strikeout to walk rate and like moving Sierras can move things much faster. Like you'll see guys in Steamer that if you've noted their fastball is up a mile and a half, suddenly their projection can look really quite different, really quite quickly. If their strikeout to walk rate over a 5-game stretch is suddenly, call it an 18% strikeout minus walk rate, whereas their historic is 12 and their velocity's up, it can move not radically, but it can move like materially. And from a fantasy perspective, if you're starting to run it through an SGP, it can start moving like rankings pretty quickly and SGP projections. I don't know. Do you have more detail than that, Jeff?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. The one thing with pitchers is like their strikeout rate and their walk rate stabilize really quickly. There's, and it does for hitters, but it doesn't really matter that as much. Like we really care more about like the home runs and stolen bases. I mean, in all fairness, but it's like the, and they don't really sometimes move that much for hitters. But that's the key, is that a lot of the pitching stuff stabilizes really quick. Like I know if the velocity changes, it's an immediate like half a, you know, K per nine difference up or down. I think that's what it is for 1 mile an hour in velocity. So you can see some pretty quick jumps that way.
Take Turnbull. He has a 32% strikeout rate to 41 hitters as a starting pitcher. So there's no relief appearances yet. Obviously, I don't know. Do you know offhand, Jeff, what strikeout rate stabilization number is in terms of batters or innings?
God, I was thinking like six, like 2 months, but that's...
Yeah. So if let's say Turnbull has, call it, 6 more starts. So we're in late May, and his strikeout rate obviously is going to be 32%. But let's say it's like 26%, 27%. Then at that point, like a Steamer will say he's not the same starting pitcher we projected back in January and November. He's more this guy. It's not 100% this guy because we still have to have regression baked in, and his previous stats are real and they count. But it will move very quickly, very, very quickly for pitchers.
I always try to reference that one Fangraphs article. I have it bookmarked, but it's rooted back to 2010, and I always wonder if that have changed at all, like the stabilization point. Because I try to use that graph sometimes, but it just seems like it
actually would be a good article for Jeff to write, not in the process, but for Fangraphs, like an updated when you're just struggling to find an updated based on the best Statcast data we have right now, stabilization for the stats we care about.
Yeah, sounds like for someone else.
To give somebody an idea, I have no ideas.
I've already got like the monster injury one that. Fangraphs is, well, the problem is
like, Jordan Rosenblum. He seems like the right guy to do that.
Yeah, it's, but it's kind of Jordan. Just like you do it and it helps everyone, but it's kind of like it's boring as hell. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I did this.
True. Fuck these podcasts.
The person who may have them, and I wish he'd put them out, or at least some basic ones, is probably Cardi, where he runs them every year. And I could see why he would want to hold some back. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not going to give you all my numbers for my projections, but it'd be nice to have like strikeout rate, walk rate, maybe some of the other ones for hitters and just be like, these are like six I'll put out every year and see if they're still the same.
Yep.
That's fair. Jeff, heading over to your Big Kids article. Big Kids name is still there, which I like to see, but 9 high stakes leagues on the NFBC. Different, a little bit different than the main events. The air drops very differently there, but I just wanted to get your guys' reaction to the Blaze Alexander, Oliver Dunn, big, kind of, you know, not big ads this week, but there was a lot of tension toward them. And also I want to tie it into Cody Bradford as well, who you mentioned in your mining the news. So let's start off with the hitters first. Blaze Alexander, Oliver Dunn, what kind of run you think these guys can sustain in fantasy league this year?
I think they're like, I'm considering like a 1 month run. I in both cases I had them in waterfalls. Jeff Erickson would be proud of that. They're put him in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was mainly, I was hurting for some, like my bench shortstops weren't like good, or they actually got hurt. Like I kind of had Perdomo. He was one I was targeting because they were going to Colorado trying to get him a week early. Then he got hurt. So in both cases, they weren't someone that I had to stick into my lineup. And it was more just my bench backups is what I was looking for with both of them. I don't see like top 100, 150 upside for him. They're kind of like, okay, but it was more of the positions is more what I was looking for. There's plenty of outfielders, but if I needed some shortstops, it was like them or Nick Ahmed. I mean, it was pretty rough there on the shortstop waiver wires to try to get someone. So it was like, well, I'm going to have kind of garbage. I was just trying to find anyone that was rather interesting. And that's just where I kind of stood with both of them. Dunn, he's just fine. There's just a lot of swing and miss to his game. He was riding, actually I see his BABIP's down quite a bit. I don't know if there's just no prospect pedigree. I just don't see anything that I'm like excited about right now with him, and I could see other options coming back.
The interesting thing about Blaze is if you believe StatCast, and it's tiny samples, he's the worst defensive player in baseball. So he is quite literally first percentile in fielding run value, one percentile in range. You can't get like any worse than that. Now, on the one hand, they have started him at shortstop for 4 of the last 5 games. So they know. And if I read before Sunday all of the prospect reviews about Blaze that I could find, and none of them made the point like, boy, this guy isn't a shortstop. He's going to be a left fielder in 10 minutes, which most of the prospect, like Eric and most of the prospect guys aren't shy about saying this guy will not be a shortstop. He is playing shortstop right now in the minors, but this is ridiculous. With him, they made it seem like, to the extent he had flaws, it was not that. So this could be tiny sample size. Arizona does not strike me as a team that, even if they need somebody to replace Perdomo for a long time, that would continue to play the worst fielding shortstop in baseball forever there. They want a glove there. So either this is going to correct itself. Certainly people in the Discord who have watched a lot of Blaze, very few games at shortstop, says he's looked atrocious. So the eye test says not a good shortstop. But it's just something to watch if you're like Jeff, and he was not just this week because he's in Colorado. It's a, I'd like to be able to use him for a month. Now, they could DH him. So from a fantasy perspective, who gives a shit as long as he's playing? But it's way more likely for him to lose the job full time if he's just a DH to them versus he is the shortstop for them most days until Perdomo comes back. So just something to watch.
Very interesting. I think something that caught my eye too is, you know, I was a little hesitant when they called up Kevin Newman, and I was like, okay, what is going to be the exact usage of him? Blaze was starting against lefties, you know, and we didn't really see the usage versus the righty that weekend. But it seems to me maybe they brought up Newman because they're worried about Ketel Marte. He's DH 3 of the last 6 days he started, and he also had an off day versus a righty. and just seemed like, I don't know, I was trying to watch him run. I don't know if he's hurt at all, but obviously he's crushing the ball, and he's there, you know, most of the time leadoff hitter now. But I didn't know that was the case, you know, with Newman. I think Newman was worrying, you know, that was the concern hanging over me with Blaze, but I was nowhere near the bids anyway, you know, my $6-7 for the Colorado stream and hoping for a couple more weeks was nowhere near what the bids were.
I'm trying to think of what shortstops were hurt, because it literally is like Nick Ahmed, Nick Allen, Ernie Clement. This is in one of my OCs, so it'll even be worse probably in a 15 teamer. Chris Taylor, Enrique, Paul DeJong. It's like, it's pretty rough out there if you're trying to look for a shortstop, because I could see if someone like had to have him to fill in for a shortstop that they would have paid up for it, because it's pretty ugly underneath that.
Yeah. Definitely pretty ugly. And then, you know, it's got that power speed combo. I subscribe to TJ Stats, as I'm sure a lot of people have seen his work on Twitter. But he has rolling average graphs for the minor leagues, which I find pretty helpful when I'm trying to see, you know, when players enter a new level and whether or not they're quote unquote getting better, like their wOBA rates, their strikeout rates, and his strikeout and swing and miss just like didn't get any better over the course of Double A. So I don't know if that is going to get any better in the major leagues, but obviously in the short term, I think the new news on Garrett Mitchell was, now is June 1st, but initially it was supposed to be like around May 1st. And I was kind of worried about that too. It's like, how did that factor in to the outfield mix, and do they go back to the Sal Frelick play second and third experiment sometime? So I was a little bit worried about the longer term impact on Dunn. But in the meantime, I'm sure the guys who picked him up weren't thrilled to see him sit versus a righty. I'm sure they weren't expecting him to get any days off. You know, when you get Oliver Dunn, you can't have any days off after
just,
that. But
you think you got Oliver, 26-year-old Oliver Dunn, and you just plug it and forget it. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way in life.
I saw he was playing a lot in spring training. I'm like, who the hell is this Oliver Dunn guy? And I go and look into him. So he's like been in my brain since spring training. I was like, okay, guy's getting a long look. It was like, he's pretty good. But then the enthusiasm for him by everybody else surpassed mine for sure. it just became a nothing burger on my end. But and Jeff,
you have a lot more room in your brain if you have a special spot for Oliver Dunn for 2 months than I do. I just don't have the capacity to hold shit like that in my head for that long. I'm sorry. I guess it's good to be young.
Can you share any of that, Rob? I need some of that. Is it a special sauce, or it's genes?
it's like 35 years of drinking too much. As it turns out, it kills a lot of brain cells, Rob, and you don't have room left over in your brain anymore for Oliver Dunn.
Cheers. I like that. I'll go with that. So Jeff, I mentioned Cody Bradford's name, that he kind of reworked his curveball into the mix. And then he kind of hit, because it's one of the highest pitchers this weekend in Fab. And it's, you know, like, this is something I guess it's just all over the place with the pitch characteristics, because if you go to like Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard, and you see that he did throw a curveball last year according to his specs, and it's like, well, what is it? Is he hasn't thrown it since 2019, or is it a different shape last year and was characterized as something else? It is working this year in terms of helping its other pitches play up. I know you noted the pitch itself isn't that great, but he has a lot of stuff going on with that, plus the whole maybe Michael Lorenzen return takes his job, but maybe Lorenzen takes somebody else's job. What do you think is going to go on forward with Cody Bradford?
He's another one where he belongs in the rotation. Like, it's going to be tough to be like, you know, you've got 3 wins, you know, a 1.40 ERA, you know, probably, you know, throwing better. Evaldi's been pretty good, but it's like, you know, you just need to go to the bullpen. I've read some talk that it might be Heaney, and I can maybe see that. We'll see how that, if that works out. But yeah, I just don't see him pulling him out right now. Like, this is going to kind of be one of those, I think the team's kind of hoping something else happens. But it's also, this is the one I've read way too much on this last weekend trying to get in here. And I swear everyone for the team and all the beat writers think Lorenzen is like God's gift to pitching. And it's like, this is Michael Lorenzen. Like no one wanted him before going into the season. Like Lorenzen should be your two. He should go your one time through the lineup and your bullpen guy. That's what Lorenzen should do. Nothing more. Let him throw up harder. Let him do that for a couple innings. That's it. But my God, the team, like they signed him, they are going to fucking start him. So I don't get it. But Bradford should not, especially after he just dominated again last night. I just don't know how they pull him out. I think that maybe they told Lorenzen he's going to get a chance to start and Heaney's going to be there. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's just stupid pulling Bradford out. I don't think he's like some great pitcher. He's got an xFIP before, but that's pretty damn good in this league. Like that's actually probably better than league average at this point. So you might as well just freaking keep rolling him out.
Yeah. I have this thing in a spreadsheet. It's not as sophisticated as what Jeff does that does pitch similarities. Just like throw guys in and say, who is the most similar pitcher to them? The most similar pitcher to Michael Lorenzen, you guys are going to think I'm making this up, is Bryce Elder. Bryce Elder and Michael Lorenzen on a very superficial level are exactly the same guy. Lorenzen is one of the 10 worst starting pitchers in the last 2 years with at least 150 innings by Sierra, by strikeout minus walk rate. Like there's nothing about it's not to say, like, again, good teams need guys like Michael Lorenzen to get through the season because guys get hurt and you just need innings at some point that are not horrific innings. And Michael Lorenzen can give you some non-horrific innings. But holy shit, it's like Pedro Martinez is coming back for us. My God, we got Pedro coming. It's like it's fucking Michael Lorenzen. As like, again, as Jeff said, it's such a good point. It's like unless Scott Boras was asking for like $30 million a year for Lorenzen, he was a guy that it's like right now, should we sign Rich Hill at 48 years old or Michael Lorenzen? I guess we'll take Lorenzen instead of Rich Hill. To be honest, I think I'd rather Rich Hill this season than Michael Lorenzen. It's fucked up. I don't know where this is coming from.
He threw a no-hitter, Rob.
There's a lot of guys who have thrown no-hitters. It cracks me up when MLB sends out and look, throwing a no-hitter is still throwing a no-hitter, but it's like he made history yesterday with this no-hitter. It's like, really? Like, there have been hundreds of these. What makes it historic other than it happened yesterday? So, but kind of tautologically is historic, but there's nothing historic. Anyways, I know you're joking. Michael Lorenzen is fine. I don't think Michael Lorenzen should be owned in 12-team drafts. Like, I don't think there's any reason, maybe as a spot starter if he had a really good start and has a clear job. But Michael Lorenzen, certainly, to me, is way below replacement level in a 12-team league.
All right. Yes. Can you guys ask me this question? I couldn't figure it out, and he didn't make the list, but he was out on some other added list. What is the infatuation with Aaron Ashby? Like, everyone wants to add him. Are they still like dreaming from like 4 years ago? What is the deal with him?
He's 25 kind of years old bias, and he was about to pop, and maybe this is the year he pops.
Yeah, he's a lefty, he's on the Brewers, their organization that does, you know, it's just a whole filter of things, and then you just have to pull yourself out of that and say he's not good and hasn't been good, even in the minors hasn't been good. So he needs to show something more
than that. It's people who are still looking at 2021 sleeper lists. And it's like, look what they did with Freddie Peralta. Look what they did here. Look what they did here. Ashby's the next in line who will pitch out of the bullpen and then turn into a stud starting pitcher. I think that's where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And getting back to Bradford, he's a pretty interesting pitcher. Like his that new-ish curveball, it's 75 miles an hour. It's like only Ryan Yarbrough and Zach Thompson's curveballs are thrown that slow, but most of them are thrown pretty much a little bit faster than that. It's very slow curveball, but his getting back to his four-seamer too, Jeff, that you noted, it's only 91 miles an hour. For lefties on their four-seamer, swing and strike rate, Jordan Wicks, Reed Detmers, Andrew Heaney, and Corey Bradford. Cody Bradford. He's right ahead of Yusei Kikuchi. It's like, and right ahead of Garrett Hoshea. It's like, how the hell is he making that work with just,
I don't know how he is. Like, the fastball is getting, like, that's like good swinging strike rates for a fastball. Anything over 10 is like phenomenal. Borderline elite for a starter. And it's like, and then his sweeper slider curve, but not the curve, the slider that he's throwing kind of between different classifications is been great.
Yep.
Or is it, but it's, you can't take him out. Like, I don't know what the hell. It's like, it's working. Yeah.
Kind of a caveat sad. I can never figure that guy out at all.
I'd certainly rather rest of season Bradford over Blanco. Like, if I had to take, you know, which of these you believe in more, I certainly believe in Bradford more than I do Blanco. And put aside, like, the Texas has a bunch of injured pitchers who are going to come back. And at a certain point, Max Scherzer has to start. If DeGrom ever comes back, he has to start. So I get that there may be asymmetric risk at a certain point. But if you just told me both of them are going to run, I have way more faith that Bradford could give you a 3.9 to 4 ERA with decent peripherals and be a good starting pitcher the rest of the season than I do Blanco.
That's a great call. I like that. That's about as bold as a call I've heard so far.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Just like we predicted. Blanco. That's right. Versus Bradford
on April 11th. and they aren't hypothetical discussions for many of us. These are like, boy, who's my fifth starting pitcher, Bradford or Blanco?
Oh, man. So one of my favorite tabs on FanGraphs, and I don't use it enough for as much as I like it, is the season stat grid. I really like seeing the trends for, like, year to year. And obviously, it's really early and it's small samples, but I think it's a really useful tool, especially if you're not good at, like, you know, making a spreadsheet and finding the differences. It's a simple tool. You can set your parameters, pick your stat, and it showed the biggest improver. Then it could be from the career or from last year. So I was messing around on it. I was just looking at K percentage and hard hit. And two of the biggest droppers in both are some old-time first basemen here, and Jose Abreu and Paul Goldschmidt, two guys that we were kind of concerned about as they got older, and more so, I think, Goldschmidt because of the draft cost than Jose Abreu's. But they've had some pretty large drops so far. Especially Goldschmidt, like, I don't know if he's just, if is this the start of the end, or was last year the start of the end, but the K rate is at 31%. It just keeps climbing every year. The hard hit is not there as well, 24% to start the season. I know it's a small sample, but is this, like, super concerning right now?
I'll just start with Abreu. He's hurt. He's not playing. Yeah. There is an issue with him. So it's like known with Goldschmidt, it's not, no one's admitted anything, which doesn't mean there's nothing wrong, but it's definitely, I have a few shares of him, and it's not like I can't take him out, but I really just think he's hiding some kind of injury right here. I don't think it's like a decline. Like, the decline seems too much. Like, there could be some, and maybe this is just it. Like, it just falls off a cliff. He didn't seem like someone that would be that way, but no, it's rough. It's rough with him. Just no power on top of the no strikeout rate. So yeah, I would, I'm kind of getting to the point where seeing if who's on my bench that I might roster them for a bit until Goldschmidt shows some kinds of signs. Like, I probably have, like, possibly like Ty France or Josh Bell. I think right now I'd rather be starting them, as sad as that sounds, but it's like, yeah, got to wait for the, you can't really drop him, but you just can't keep discontinuing if he's going to produce like this or play through whatever injury it is.
Before I answer the question, Rob, I bet there are at least two or three people listening right now who say, Rob, this tab you were talking about sounds awesome on FanGraphs. How do I find this
tab? How do you get to it? Yeah.
where is it? Can you describe how one finds the season tab on Fangraphs if I wanted to find out which of my first basemen are sucking ass, because I'm not sure.
It is in a random sucking spot. Ass. Yes, you have to hover over the leaders tab, and once that comes up, you'll see batting, pitching, fielding. You'll even see major league leaders rank. You'll see a split leaderboard, and then right beneath the split leaderboard is the season stat grid. It's hidden. It's a golden gem, and it's hidden. Should be. It should have its own tab.
Okay.
Good point,
Joe.
Thank you. Yeah.
And by one leader out there who might be considering it, I couldn't find it as you said it. And I said, this sounds awesome. How do I find this on Fangraphs? So I appreciate you saying that. Now I see it. On Jose Abreu, he was dropped in at least one of my mains this past week. And I don't think that's unreasonable. The only argument that's like in your the front of your head, why do you bid on him or why do you not cut him, as the case may be, is, well, but holy shit, look how bad he was last year to start the season. And then look how perfectly cromulent, like pretty good he was after he got going last season. And therefore, it should work out the same way this year. So I want to keep him and get the good stuff or pick him up so that when it turns around, I've got him already. And that's not a particularly compelling argument whatsoever. And the thing with Jose Abreu is if you drafted him, he was cheap enough that you should have been thinking, like, I think this could be a fine first baseman, but you should absolutely be playing Ty France over Jose Abreu right now. If you can, you'd probably be better. I'm not saying you should absolutely in every 15-team league cut Jose Abreu. If he is hurt, there may be reasons to be patient, and he's shown he can turn it around. He's still a very good hitter. But you should be able to stream a first baseman or a corner guy for most teams that can do better right now than Jose Abreu and keep him on your bench if you're not going to cut him. The problem with Goldschmidt is you did pay a premium price for Paul Goldschmidt. Yeah. And his 14% hard hit rate. Like you could, as I think we probably did in the offseason, look at Paul Goldschmidt and you could from last year and tell yourself a story why it wasn't that bad. Like he still played every day. He still put it all together. It's not that bad. He's still a useful player. And he's the kind of guy on the Cardinals that even at 36, like they'll sprinkle a little bit of their pixie dust and he'll turn it all around. And his hard hit rate last year was down from where it was for like peak Paul Goldschmidt at 38%. And when he was, superstar Paul Goldschmidt, he was 46-47%. But 14% hard hit rate very early in the season, like that's like Miles Straw is looking and pointing at Paul Goldschmidt and laughing at that number. That's not a major league baseball player number, 14% again in 12 games. So he needs to either fix that or he can't play first base in the majors at that level. Like that does not work whatsoever. So I don't know what the fuck you do if you have Paul Goldschmidt, bench him and wait. I do think it's probably, even in 12 teams, like cutting Paul Goldschmidt after 12 games seems rash, because we are still early enough where if he hits 3 home runs today or tomorrow, whenever they play next, suddenly his season line looks amazing. So any player who can turn around their entire season in one day, you don't cut yet. Right. Is a pretty good rule. And Paul Goldschmidt like going off for a week is not crazy at all, but he's fucking horrendous right now. Like that's 14% hard hit rate. Like how do you do that?
Yeah, his rest of season OPS projecting right now 795 on Steamer. Preseason was 828. So that's a pretty big drop.
That's
already
a big drop.
That's a big drop. And yeah, so obviously, like you said, can't cut him yet because he can be the guy who has a 4 home a week and you're like, shit, what do I do? But you definitely can actively start shopping for a possible improvement. Maybe just a situation in Fab where you don't skip over saying, maybe, I shouldn't pick up Carlos Santana or Rowdy Tellez. Those are or even Gio Urshela, for Christ's sakes. Like, he's playing and he's got multi-eligibility. At least he can hit the ball right now, but it's definitely something I thought, you know, as I was, again, I just really like using that tab, and so a small sample stuff, but it's definitely interesting. And the last guy, I just wanted to see if you guys would, if you were the Detroit Tigers, would you get rid of Javi Baez at this point? I mean, what is he doing to this team? He's God, awful.
The contract, like, it's just like bad contract time.
God. Yeah.
It's tough for any, like, I think Chris Davis was the largest contract. They still had like $50 million when they cut him. I think Baez isn't there yet, but that might break the record. It's like, if Stanton was like from last year, I thought he was going to be close, but he sort of kind of has turned it around. But my God, this is might be the most money eaten ever out of that season of the shortstop. My God, it's just,
he's just awful. I mean, he's striking out 31%, but he's got a 323 OPS to start the season. I just watched a couple of his plate appearances. I don't know why. I kind of find myself watching the Tigers often. I just really like their team all throughout. Not Jack Flaherty, Rob, but definitely the rest of the team. But he just looks like he is done, like done. No saving Javi Baez. I'm just, how the hell do they get out from this? You know,
they understand
the White Sox.
No, they you understand it's sunk cost. And yeah, the thing is, the Tigers have a fun, interesting young team that is probably a year away from competing for a real wild card or the division. But they're a credible team on the field right now.
Yeah.
And the most incredible thing to buy a Baez is like Fangraph's page to me, beyond the amount of money he's still owed. Is if you look at all his projections, it is so hard for a shortstop to have 500 plate appearances still projected and have a sub one WAR value the rest of the season, in the sense that like the defensive value that WAR prescribes to a shortstop, if you're just a guy who's standing at shortstop, your defensive value should give you more in 500 plate appearances than one WAR. Like, it's just, there's such an advantage, a positional advantage to WAR. And Baez is, he's not a great shortstop anymore, but he's a, let's call it a league average ish shortstop. So his defensive value should get him there, but he's such a bad hitter that they are just creating a sinkhole for their entire team by having him out there. So yeah, I mean, if I were running, it's easy for, I'm not selling crappy pizza, so it's not my money the way it is for the Illiches as the owner, but I would eat the money. It's a sunk cost. You screwed up. You tried to bring in a flashy free agent. It did not work out, but you have enough talent now that I don't think the fan, I would imagine, I'm not a Detroit Tiger fan, but I imagine Detroit Tiger fans would feel relief if they move on from Baez, because there's enough things to be excited for the team. That like let's watch more of that, less of Javi Baez popping out.
100%, and his 47% owned in Main Event, that has to be zero soon, because he's just, what are you holding him for? You know, it just seems like an easy cut for me at this point.
Yeah, there's enough stolen bases out there that even if Javi Baez like gets 20 stolen bases, you don't want all the other shit that goes along with that.
Right. Yeah, not a 180 average, you know.
No. With no power.
Awesome. Where did it go? Oh God. Where did it go? All right, we're gonna end this pod with a couple of questions from the Discord. Our buddy Drew Forte leading the online championship again after winning it last season. Phil Duto answered a question by Andrew Sullivan, kind of like he was out of his true closer. He didn't get any high dollar ads and just wondered if he should like start a Chris Martin or Hunter Harvey, or is it too crazy to just start rolling out 9 starting pitchers every week? And Phil's response was, you know, start the 9 starters now and catch up later. And one, I guess Drew was just kind of trying to know how you guys would feel about doing that at this point of the season so early. I mean, it makes sense to me. It definitely doesn't feel right, because you're like, oh shit, I might get really behind on saves. But how do you guys handle any situation you find yourselves in with that, with having no closers to throw, or just that next in line kind of guy in an online championship 12 team league? Jeff?
Usually before I first thing I ever do for the weekend is look at my lineup and add a pitcher to it because someone's going to get hurt on Sunday, just or even Monday. Like, so I have 10 guys. Figure out, do I have 10 guys I'm willing to throw for that weekend? And I really start from there. And if there's, you know, Steven Matz is, you know, going to Atlanta, you're like, okay, I'm not going to use him. I got to find someone else to go with. I just start putting my bids in that way. And maybe I'm not, maybe Phil would throw Matz at Atlanta, but I think eventually on like my drop down list, I'm going to start hitting middle relievers or some guys to take a chance with what saves. This early in the season, I'm kind of loaded up on starters. So it's usually not so much of a problem because I'm trying to get, trying to figure out who's good, and I'm have bare minimum hitters on my team. But I don't know. It'll happen sometime this year. And right now there seems to be some starters that we kind of like that are readily available. Paul Blackburn's still out there. People have been bidding on. It's like, well, they'll at least try him. But I'm guessing in probably about 2 weeks, it's just going to be like, there's like one pitcher that people are going to be after and the rest of it's just going to be garbage. Just kind of the hope right now is to try to get those starters before then, but I don't know. Are we really going to go after any of the guys at Colorado? I don't think that's going to be way. Maybe we'll stream one if they're going to Oakland or something, but I don't know. To kind of get back to it, I guess, I don't know. I would throw some middle relievers if there's just horrible options otherwise.
And on the flip, real quick, what would you use to determine, like, if you had that third closer, are you starting him no matter what, or do you feel like you fall behind in K's too much? Like, if you have three legit closers, are you just throwing them in there right now?
Yep, I'm throwing them in.
They have the jobs.
Right? They got the job. They can be hurt. Nothing's so mad when you, like, will lose a closer, and it's like you've got another one on the bench, or you just don't know when the saves are going to come. Just get the saves while you can, and you can start streaming some starters later or start trying to find them more. And the other thing I kind of found out too is with usually your ratios really kind of move up because you're dropping that seventh starter. Like if you've got three closers, that your team's looking really good and you can kind of stream later because all your ratios will be in good shape.
What if it's an amazing two-step versus like your third closer? Are you passing that up too?
If you have an amazing third step, I mean, maybe someone else should be sitting. I mean, I don't know.
Right,
maybe
I get it.
It's like you kind of have to make the call sometime, but my God, I'm not sitting amazing two steps at this point in the season, man. I ran out freaking Gavin Williams in a league. Like, what the fuck am I doing, dude? It's been rough.
Yeah, if your seventh starting pitcher has an amazing two step and you're between your seventh starting pitcher and your third closer, you should shut the fuck up. Do not post in the Discord. I'm struggling between this really good pitcher who has two incredible starts at the White Sox and then at Oakland versus I have three closers on this team. I don't know what to do. Please help me. Man first overall in online championships. The answer is go fuck yourself, Curtis or Drew. We don't want to hear these questions. For the rest of us, I agree with Jeff. Banks and Phil, because I think Phil's answer is the right answer. You banks. So there's two guiding principles here. Bank stats when you can bank stats. If you can get to your 70 saves in the first half of the season, awesome. They count. They don't get to take them away from you. Similarly, if you have no closers, you can't conjure them from thin air. Like, you can't just wish cast that Hunter Harvey is going to get four saves this week, so I should play Hunter Harvey, when you don't believe that's actually true. So bank the starting stats. All you can do is 26 times or 27 times, depending on the season, put the best lineup you possibly can for that week and move on to the next week. And if the nine pitchers you happen to have that week or the best nine pitchers are all starting pitchers because your closers got hurt or it's Bednar or it's one of the other closers who isn't quite working out right now, then do nine starting pitchers and look next weekend whether there's now a closer I can pick up to change the equation. But if your nine best pitchers are starting pitchers, play those guys. Like, that's it's yeah. And if the answer is there's a middle reliever out there who's better than one of the starting pitchers, grab that middle reliever for a dollar. Like, if you don't have nine good starting pitchers, there's nothing wrong with starting a high leverage middle reliever. It can work out really well for you. But yeah, if you have good nine good starting pitchers, play nine good starting pitchers.
Yeah, and I think Jeff wrote a great article too about how to try those middle relief options for that following week. And you know, it takes a little extra legwork and trying to pay attention to the usage on Sunday of the relievers, but it can go a long way in determining the, you know, trying to get that Monday save from the, you know, the next in line guy where the closers work 3 out of 4. It's a shot in the dark sometimes because a lot of your day is reliant on that. It's like, no, this was supposed to happen today. Pierce Johnson was supposed to get this save, not fucking Michael Tonkin, you know, and you're screaming at the TV. That could really lead you some bad ways, but cool, good stuff. Awesome stuff, guys. Appreciate the another beautiful Launch Angle episode here. Any parting words before we get out of here?
No.
Guess not. Beautiful thing. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Launch Angle Podcast. For Rob Silver, Jeff Zimmerman, I'm Rob D. Catch you later.